Dr. Neil Wall at his office at the School of Public Health, and today's date is August 31st, 93. Dr. Wall, would you just say a word or two so we know you're on with us?
Yes, I'm glad to see you both, and I'm glad to see the tape recorder, too.
Good, we
Since
are, too.
Since mine isn't good enough.
Oh, that laugh. All right, I want to just clarify a few things that I had some question about from our last visit. What year did you return from Hiroshima? Do you remember?
Yes, 1957.
1957, and you went on to the Oak Ridge Health
National
Physics Division?
Yeah, Oak Ridge National Laboratory Health Physics Division.
I see, and that was immediately after you returned?
It wasn't immediately enough. I had left the Air Force when I went to Japan, and since I wasn't going back to the Air Force, I didn't have any job to return to.
I see.
And so it took a couple of weeks to get organized. I had been corresponding from Japan, but I had to visit several places, and decided that Oak Ridge was the most interesting opportunity.
So you knew you would be going there before you left Japan?
I knew it was a possibility. Oh. I also was considering a position at Tufts, up in Boston, and a couple of others.
Mm-hmm. And then there was another point. You told me that when you came to Pittsburgh under the Rockefeller grant, there was a health act, and I couldn't get to a health act of something.
Oh, the
to do
title
with the effects
of the grant.
Of, yes.
The title of the grant was Health Aspects, of Nuclear Technology.
Okay, I couldn't get that clear, and
right.
I just wanted to know for sure. And another point, you talked about the Third International Symposium at Oak Ridge National Lab on the
right.
psychological effects.
And
you wrote a paper for that. Is that already taken place, that Third Symposium?
Yes, that was a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm, 1991.
Yeah, the proceedings have come out. Mm-hmm. They published the
your paper.
Proceedings, including my paper. Yeah.
Okay, and then these symposiums will go on every couple of years. Is that it?
Yeah, I think it's a mechanism for keeping everyone who deals with radiation accidents up to date on the results of previous accidents and new methods for treatment and so on. It's an international symposium, so this covers most of the world's accidents.
Are there people that come there from Russia, from the Chernobyl thing?
Oh, yes. They were very active participants in this last one that, as I said, mm-hmm. focused on the psychological side.
I see.
The previous ones were more focused on the medical, pure biological, I guess you would call
mm-hmm.
it.
You also mentioned this deregulation advisory committee that you have been on, and you said something about anticipating a last meeting. Oh, decontamination.
It would be nice
I'm
to be
so
on
happy
the deregulation
I asked you, yes.
committee. But
decontamination. And you said that you anticipated a final meeting?
Yes. In September.
This one? Next
this,
one?
Yes.
93.
About 3 weeks from now.
Uh-huh.
Be the final meeting of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's advisory panel on the decontamination of Three Mile Island Unit 2.
I see.
Because the decontamination is now
yes, sir.
As complete as it will be,
mm-hmm.
short of when they tear down the hole.
So you assume your advisory committee will go out of business, too?
It is more than an assumption. The decision has been made by the Nuclear Regulatory
Commission. Oh, I didn't know that you had made that. Because you had mentioned how much people, the public, liked coming to that group and expressing their questions. And
yeah, that's true. And it'll be interesting to see what the public response will be, but it's a decision that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has made.
Will it be advertised to the people who are interested, will come to that planning?
Yes, these are all public meetings. They're all advertised in the local papers and in the Federal Register, of course.
Okay, now we can go on. The last we talked with you was about your being in Kiev for the Chernobyl accident in 1989, which was about 2 years after that accident occurred, right?
Right. Yeah, that was the first time that the Soviet scientists presented their observations of the effects of the accident. Let me just check the date.
The date of your being there?
I hope you can
oh
read this.
Oh my, you have a Russian.
These are the proceedings of the meeting.
Can you read Russian?
No, but I can read the English translation.
I see.
1988.
88, okay.
May 11th to 13th, 1988.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you were on the health, there were a number of specialties or committees, and you were on the Health and Environment Committee, is that correct?
Subsequent to 1988, but not much later, our government entered into an agreement with the Soviet government to exchange information on the nuclear safety as it related to civilian nuclear reactors.
Mm-hmm. Ah, there you are. Like that. There you are with your name in Russian. You look very intense.
It was an intense meeting.
Yeah. And this committee was to develop research projects, the one that you were on?
We were to exchange information which would lead to greater safety of operation, and the areas that were covered in this international binational agreement, there were 10 different areas.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them had to do with engineering, operational problems of reactors, but Area 7, it happened to be 7 mm-hmm. of the list,
mm-hmm.
Was problems relating to health and the environment.
Mm-hmm.
For most of the areas, we the U.S. participants, probably had more to contribute, and our Soviet colleagues were more the recipients of information.
Mm-hmm.
But in the area of health and environment, because of the impact of the accident, they had more experience and more information to contribute, and we were the intended or hoped to be the recipients. The health working group, of which I was a member, met with our Soviet opposite numbers in Moscow and in Kiev. We had several meetings. And out of those developed a number of collaborative projects. Some of them then got funded by the Department of Energy, which was the major government participant in Area 7. The other areas, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was the main participant, or the lead agency, as it's called. But for Area 7, the Department of Energy had a more appropriate professional staff, so DOE became the lead agency for Area 7, including the health area.
Mm-hmm.
DOE funded some of the projects, including one that I'm working on currently, in collaboration with a group in Kiev, and some of the projects developed further and received funding from our NIH.
Mm-hmm.
Competitive grants were awarded for some of them. We're still working on the initial stages of our project, which is a study of Ukrainian school children.
Yes, you left us at that point. You started. We're going to start to talk about it, and we'd like to hear more about it.
Okay. One of the outcomes of the accident was a release of radioactivity for a period of about 10 days. First, there was this essentially a steam explosion, and then fire of the fuel moderator, which in the Russian design was carbon rods, and the overheating led to the cooling water vaporizing to steam and an explosion. So a lot of the radioactivity went straight up into the air, about 8 or 10,000 feet, and then it got picked up by the winds that were prevailing at the time. They were going to the west of the plant. The plant is located at the northern edge of Ukraine, which has a border to the north with Belarusia and a border to the east with Russia. These, of course, were all part of the Soviet Union at the time. Now they're independent states. The cloud then going to the west affected people in both the Ukraine and Belarusia in that area. But as the accident continued and the fire continued in the reactor, more activity was released. The wind shifted to the north, and then the fallout was mainly concentrated in Belarusia. It went a lot further, of course, and it was the northern shift that led to the detection of the radioactivity by the plants, by the nuclear plants in Scandinavia that monitor their environment, and that was the first recognition outside the Soviet Union that something had gone wrong. They thought first they were the source, and then realized that it was coming from the Soviet Union. And that led, of course, to the international outcry about the secrecy of an event which affected many other countries outside.
They were trying to keep Chernobyl a secret?
Oh, yes. Yes, that was one of the things which led to the political opening, Glasnost, and the change in government policy came as a result. This was sort of the last straw. It wasn't the entire cause, but it certainly put the government in a very difficult situation, not only in its relations with other governments in Europe in particular, but also with its own people, because once this became public information in the Western world, it was beamed back to the people in the Soviet Union, and they discovered that their government hadn't told them anything about the risks that they were facing. Kiev, the accident, you know, was at the end of April. They went right ahead with preparations, and they carried out the May Day celebrations and parades and, you know, all of the gathering of people outdoors, which if they had known, they might have avoided. So
if the people had known.
Yes, if the people had known.
They managed to keep secret, evidently, other accidents. You mentioned that there was some in the Ural Mountains,
yes,
and so forth.
Yes.
So they evidently were kept quiet, but they couldn't do the same thing here.
Yeah, those were far enough away and internally contained. Russia, of course, the Soviet Union is a huge territory, and the Urals were far enough away so that there were hints which raised questions, but they were never clear-cut enough for the other parts of the world to take action. Mm-hmm. But the people themselves in the local area didn't know what was going on, and probably have suffered health impairments as a result. Mm-hmm. So this shifting of the cloud varied the locations of the radioactive contamination. Mm-hmm. Our study population for this first collaborative study is a Ukrainian school children population. It came about in an interesting way. Pittsburgh has a lot of people who originated in Ukraine and who have families that are still there. These were the people that worked in the steel mills. And the various people heard from relatives in Ukraine about health problems, and a number of reports about problems with eye, with vision in the school children population. They came to Pitt and asked for help, and our Eye and Ear Institute got interested, and our epidemiology and biostatistics people were consulted. So one of the biostatisticians consulted me because he knew of my background and past experience mm-hmm. with the Japanese studies and so on. And it began to sound as if there might be some questions worth attempting to answer, although the levels of radioactivity and radiation exposure didn't appear to be high enough from what we had heard about the environmental measurements to produce any eye changes, which made it curious, and with enough pressure and indeed not just moral support but financial support from the Ukrainian community, we started to
Pittsburgh,
pull together
Ukraine.
A project. Yeah.
Really?
And they expanded their support base. There was a foundation that had been started called the Save the Children Foundation, something like that, or Children of Chernobyl Foundation, which was raising money in Ukrainian and communities in other centers mm-hmm. in the U.S. And this was the key base of support for our initial exploration. At the initial exploration, it turned out by this time we were dealing with the Ukrainian government rather than the Soviet government, and the Ukrainian health ministry was interested, and our epidemiological biostatistical colleagues were provided with rosters of the school children so that we could design a study that could be defined by us and implemented, carried out by us with equipment that we would bring and our personnel, so we would have confidence that it was as reliable as possible. Not that they don't have trained people, but we don't know them that well. And the concept of experimental design in epidemiology to get biostatistical significance in the results is not one which is pushed in the education system for their medical profession. It's hard enough to push in the U.S. to get
right.
Physicians or medical students to pay attention to biostatistics, because coronary occlusions are much more exciting.
Right.
So we had a group go over there. We got the rosters of the schools in each of three areas, two in highly contaminated areas which had been highly contaminated, and one in similar rural community but in the other direction, near the Russian border, which had not received any significant radioactivity. And we selected at random the children from the rosters to make up 600 children in each of the three areas. And our reason for doing the selection ourselves was to avoid any bias. We felt that if the local hierarchy was to make the determination, we would have a preponderance of party members and their families and party officials and so on. So we made the selections, and then a team went over to do the actual observations on this selected group. And it was mainly ophthalmological equipment, which we got not just from the financial support I mentioned, but most of the companies that we spoke to that were suppliers of the necessary equipment, when they heard the purposes, gave us the equipment at cost or better, including one. I was at a meeting in Japan, and so I spoke to the people who made some of the eye testing equipment, which happened to be Japanese, and they indeed were generous in, in reducing prices. And as we told them, our objective was to bring our own equipment, but not just to walk off, but to leave all the equipment there for their continued use. And indeed, that's what we did. So we collected the information on 600 children in each of three areas, and a subset of 50 of these in each of three areas was asked to give a blood sample. The blood samples were for my part of the study and my collaborators at the Institute of Radiation Medicine in Kiev. They have a cytogenetics lab for chromosome analysis. They have been doing studies of radiation effects. And so they processed the samples that were sent each day by courier from the field where they were collected. They were processed within 24 hours, which of course we couldn't do if the samples came to us here. And it would be very hard to set up a laboratory of our own independently over there, so we took advantage of their knowledge and interest. And that is the collaborative study that we're carrying out. The preparations...
It's still going on?
Yeah. We're still working on our part of it across the street at Presby. And the slides were made from the processed material, and half were left in Kiev for them to study, and half here in Pittsburgh. As soon as we finish, we will meet and compare our results and decide about publication, depending on what we have. The slides that I have are all numbered, and I don't have access to the key, which would tell me who each number represents, so we're doing this without knowing whether we're looking at a sample from a child in the control area or one of the two contaminated areas. And so we will see whether we have any significant differences between control and exposed. And then we will, as another part of the study, we're reviewing the same slides using the automated analysis system that we have developed, an automated microscope system that looks at the slide and decides whether it sees an abnormal chromosome or not, and we compare those results to our human visual results, and then compare those to the visual results that were achieved in Kiev.
Now, you, when you say we, I assume you have some epidemiologists collating this material, and then you, and who else works with you to
Dr. together? Richard Day is heads up the biostatistical input in the design of the study and the analysis of the data. Dr. Michael Gorin is an ophthalmologist who has a joint appointment in the Department of Human Genetics in the School of Public Health here. Gorin, G-O-R-I-N. He has been very active in that part of the study. And
some of the other ophthalmologists at Eye and Ear Institute participated. When I say our team went over, I should also mention that as part of our team from other parts of the country and indeed from Canada, we had nursing personnel as well as ophthalmologists and pediatricians who were bilingual, Ukrainian as well as English. We went through all of the procedures that we would do here in the U.S., informed written consent, not only by the parents, but by the children. So we observed all of the procedures that we would have done if we had been doing it in Pittsburgh. And our team, in turn, trained some of their personnel, the Ukrainian personnel, the physicians.
Is there a goal of, in terms of time, when you will get together to put together for whatever learning purposes and help to these people?
On all of these collaborative studies?
Yes.
We had a fairly organized plan. The working groups that were participating in the health and environment part of the study. It has gotten a little less organized with the demise of the Soviet Union. Because, just as in our case, the population of interest is now in three independent countries. It makes it much more complicated because now we're dealing with three governments and maybe even the private sector will develop, although public health tends to be a governmental responsibility. We don't always know who the players are anymore. They're not necessarily the people we started out with. And so it's not entirely clear. Hopefully the Department of Energy, as soon as it has a new Assistant Secretary of Energy for Health, Safety, and Environment, that this program falls under that particular Assistant Secretary. Well, the Assistant Secretary we worked with up to a change of administration is no longer there, and the replacement has not yet been appointed. So there's no Assistant Secretary to set policy, and so we're a little bit adrift because of that. The latest candidate that I heard for nomination for that position, I don't know whether she paid the maid
taxes
or something went wrong. I think my latest information is they're back to square one on finding an assistant secretary.
Now, is your material being published as you go along, the material that you're pulling together or the group is pulling together here in your particular division?
It depends on the progress of a particular study. For example, in the case of our study, we probably won't be ready for 6 to 12 months from now. It depends in each case on how much progress and whether the results are adequate for reporting.
So you're in constant contact with the people who are doing the footwork here, so to speak?
I'm not sure what you... do you mean in our specific project?
Yes, here. Are you supervising?
Yeah, here the Dr. Day and I are in frequent contact. A paper has been written and probably, if it hasn't been submitted for publication, will be shortly on the eye findings, which turned out to be positive. As I said, unexpectedly, we didn't think the level of activity was sufficient, but it turned out that there do seem to be subtle lens changes in the children in the higher exposed areas as distinguished from the control. And particularly in the older boys in this school population,
mm-hmm.
one can theorize about kicking up the dust more actively. It also correlates with the degree of admitted eating of local wild mushrooms. They're not supposed to be eating local food, but with distribution problems as they are in the former Soviet countries, I think that tends to be overlooked. And we did, in these children, it was not just eye studies and a blood sample, but complete medical examinations and detailed histories of location, nutritional histories, and so on. So maybe there's something there. We're anxious to see whether the blood studies, the chromosome studies, will show any similar positive findings.
Now, do you anticipate that you're going to be medically, these children are going to be able to be helped as a result of your